Leaders from South America's 12 nations meet in Brazil. Their host, President Lula da Silva, is calling for more unity and even a new single currency. So, what are his plans? And could they become reality? And what's bringing these countries together now? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Adrian Finnegan. South America's biggest nation has played host to the continent's leaders. It's part of a drive by Brazil's left-wing president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, to create a regional political and economic bloc. There's strength in unity, as the saying goes, and it's one of the former trade union leader will be hoping applies to neighbouring states too. A single currency for South America is one plan he's keen to develop, to reduce dependency on the US dollar. He wants more cooperation in areas that include trade, healthcare, the environment, and fighting organized crime. But the presence of Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro caused some division. Our Latin America editor Lucia Newman tells us more from Brasilia on what was discussed behind closed doors.
It is the first time in nearly a decade that leaders of all the South American countries actually sit down face to face, actually behind closed doors, and speak frankly about the possibility of finally laying out the groundwork for regional integration. It is something that they all feel strongly about, particularly at a time when the world is forming into different blocs. They all believe that South America has to have a voice. It is an economically important part of the world. Altogether, they make up the fifth largest economic bloc in the world. And right now, their voices are not being heard because they are divided. Certainly, that seems to be the argument that they are making. However, it's been very difficult to bring about. President Lula, when he was last president, created UNASUR, and that is the Union of South American Nations. That was supposed to be the building block for this regional integration. However, it fell apart when the political pendulum in this region swung from the left to the right. The presence of Venezuela's leader, Nicolás Maduro, was somewhat divisive. Some of the presidents believe that he is an authoritarian leader, and they had no problem telling him so to his face. But Maduro was actually very conciliatory. He simply did not answer the criticisms and said that he was happy to just agree to disagree on those issues. In the end, all the presidents were happy to be able to all sit down together for the first time in so long and work towards something that they all believe is important. As President Lula said, after 500 years, and that is a reference to the arrival of Columbus in the Americas, we finally have to be able to leave from the margins and have our voices heard.
Well, this isn't Lula da Silva's first attempt to create unity. In 2008, he led efforts to establish UNASUR, a regional bloc modelled on the European Union, to integrate the 12 South American nations. But a swing to the political right on the continent led to the group fracturing. Disagreements over its leadership and Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's involvement led to seven countries withdrawing after 2017. South America's population is nearly 450 million. That's around 5.5% of the world's population. This year, the region's GDP is estimated to be just over $4 trillion, about a quarter of that of the EU. The continent is rich in natural resources. Brazil is the second largest producer of iron ore, while Chile produces around a third of the world's copper. It's also the second biggest producer of the increasingly sought-after mineral lithium. So let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. From Caracas, we're joined by Tamia Porras Ponceleon, Managing Director of Global Sovereign Advisory. He was Deputy Minister and Senior Aide to former President Hugo Chavez and President Nicolas Maduro's Chief of Staff. From Bayonne is Guillaume Long, Senior Analyst at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and a former Foreign Minister of Ecuador. And from Miami, Danny Shaw, Professor of Latin American and Caribbean Studies at City University, New York. He's also International Affairs Analyst for TV network Telesur. A warm welcome to you all. Danny, let's start with you. President Lula da Silva has made no secret of the fact that he would like to revive this regional body, UNASUR, the Union of South American Nations. Is it actually a good idea, though? What chance of uniting such a divided bloc of nations?
That's, of course, one of the main challenges. UNASUR could be powerful now that Lula is in power and there's some other left-leaning presidencies in Bolivia. Mexico certainly moved in a more anti-imperialist direction. Of course, Nicaragua, Cuba, Venezuela have long opposed U.S. foreign policy across the hemisphere. The challenge is that, you know, what if a Bolsonaro-esque type figure is elected in any country in the upcoming years? That will immediately divide this attempt at unity and integration. So it's very important what we've seen in the past few days with this UNASUR coming together, but there's a long way to go. We see voices that want more integration with the North, with the United States and the European Union, than they want integration with their own South American and Caribbean neighbors. So it will not be an easy feat to achieve this unity in an ongoing way.
Guillaume, is it a realistic ambition for South America to have its own version of the EU or African Union? How does the continent move past organizations that ultimately turn into clubs for ideologically aligned allies? What tangible benefits would such a grouping need to deliver to outlast the continent's ever-shifting political landscape?
Sure. So Latin American integration has been a long-lasting dream of the Latin American region. It goes back to the 19th century. South American integration, which is what we're talking about, is a bit more recent. It has its roots in actually a Brazilian consensus, broadly speaking, between the center-left and the center-right. It starts in the 90s, even the center-right then under President Cardoso was in favor of South American regional space. And then much more decisively under Lula, in the first decade of this century, the Community of South American Nations was created in 2004. And then finally in 2008, UNASUR, with the 12 member states. In fact, it was created as a non-ideological, non-political forum. It had 12 countries, some on the left, some on the right, and the only common denominator was geography. You had to be a South American nation. But then from 2015, 2016 onwards, there's a shift to the right and quite radical right. And from 2019 onwards in Brazil, you know, some Bolsonaro, sort of very radical and reactionary right, accompanied by Trump in the United States, who encouraged Latin American countries to drop this dream, to abandon South American unity, and to return to the sort of the fold of Monroeism, which is often a term we use in Latin America, you know, the Monroe Doctrine, the U.S. hegemony in the hemisphere. And the expression, the organization which best embodies this is the Organization of American States, which has its headquarters in Washington, which is tightly managed and controlled by the U.S. And, of course, the U.S. hasn't really wanted an independent group of states with strategic autonomy such as UNASUR. Now, with the shift to the left, we're seeing the possibility of UNASUR being rekindled. But obviously, we saw it yesterday at the summit. I mean, Lula really wants some more reasonable right-wing characters, figures, presidents, so on and so forth, to sort of understand that it's in the strategic interest of the region. Lula doesn't want it to be a club of leftists. He wants everybody on board from all sides of the political spectrum to understand that South American regionalism, a South American organization, UNASUR, is in the collective interest of all 12 countries in a world which, as you said at the beginning of this show, is going to be increasingly dominated by regional blocs with a new Cold War, you know, emerging on the horizon, and you're going to need some kind of regional geopolitics and muscle to face the challenges of the future.
Tamir, while a majority of South American leaders are currently leftist or centrists, the region is more ideologically pluralistic than it's been for some time right now. I mean, there is no guarantee, is there, that things will stay this way? Is it perhaps just a matter of time before a grouping like the one that President Lula da Silva falls apart again on ideological grounds? Is this the best way to achieve the unity among South American nations that President Lula da Silva is looking for?
Well, that is the price of democracy in Latin America. In Latin America, politics are competitive. You can have changes in government and alternation in power. And it's the people of the countries of South America who decide that those changes. And I would say happily, to some extent, those alternations happen regularly. But on the other hand, President Lula couldn't have said it better yesterday by giving an example. Brazil and Argentina, for instance, have a bilateral trade that can amount to $30-35 billion per year. That is massive. That is very, very important. And in a way, he was comparing that trade between Brazil and Argentina to the trade that happens every year between Brazil and the European Union, that is probably only $8-9 billion. So he was, by giving that example, explaining that this integrationist effort needs to be very pragmatic, and that the trade between Brazil and Argentina is crucial for the companies and the businesses in both countries. So why not finding ways to not only improve the conditions for that that trade to happen, and for example, one of the ideas that he put on the table was, why not building a common currency that would allow Brazil and Argentina to perform that trade exchange without resorting to U.S. dollar? Why should Brazil and Argentina trade in U.S. dollars among them, and instead find a regional arrangement? So the more that integration goes into very practical aspects like the one I'm quoting, or for instance, you could say today is very difficult for South American students to go from one country to another and come back to their countries and just, you know, exercise their profession with a degree or a diploma obtained in a fellow South American nation. So the moment you start moving into that direction and that people see the concrete benefits, it's going to be very much harder for any other government, or, you know, as conservative as it could be, to explain to their populations that they're walking away from such a, I would say, pragmatic and beneficial arrangement.
And to me, just briefly, what would a regional trade currency look like?
No, I mean, it's something that could be, you know, what was in existence in the European community before the existence of the euro. What you need is to have mechanisms. You don't actually need to move to a formal common currency, because that would require a long-lasting effort of convergence of the different monetary policies. That probably is it's a bit ambitious to, or probably is not even suitable. That's a debate that the countries need to have. But why not having, you know, a common currency that simply allows, you know, the different central banks to compensate their trade? You know, those tools, as Guillaume said, existed in the past. You know, the Latin American integration is not a new idea. What we need is to use those tools, for instance, to just improve the interdependency of our regions, and see in which aspects, in which areas of the economy it makes sense to integrate further. I would just take one example: the energy. That's something that President Lula talked about yesterday. Why would some South American nations import their gas or oil from a very remote region when, you know, Brazil, Venezuela have immense reserves, just because there's no, you know, there's no pipelines in the region? So those pipelines, those infrastructures need to be built, and that needs to be a common effort in order to allow for those projects to happen.
Okay, Danny, the presence of President Maduro at the summit made some leaders, even left-leaning ones, uncomfortable. Did President Lula da Silva go too far in his embrace of Venezuela's president?
That's certainly been the headline in Bloomberg and the New York Times and the full gamut of U.S. media outlets. Here in the U.S., you can't even mention Venezuela. There's no objective analysis. There's no sociological or historical critical understanding. of everything that's happened in Venezuela. Just like there's a Russia phobia, there's a Venezuela phobia, there's a new Cold War mentality. Why shouldn't the elected representatives of all countries, as the guest said, regardless of their ideology, this is a geographic unity that they're trying to build. So, of course, leadership from out the continent should be invited. It's so important to break this dollar dependency, the debt traps, the structural adjustment programs from the IMF and the World Bank have done so much damage. A common currency can begin to break this historical dollar dependency, the supremacy of the dollar. And what Washington has consistently done is they have vilified any presidency, any leadership, any country that has tried to oppose their unipolar designs for the region. That's why we have, I think, what can only be termed as sensationalism against Nicolás Maduro.
Guillaume, Lula said that there was very large prejudice against the country and that the image of an anti-democratic Venezuela was a narrative promoted by the Western countries imposing harsh sanctions that exacerbate the country's humanitarian and economic crisis. Did he, as Chile's president has argued, make light of human rights violations in Venezuela?
I think Lula's approach to Venezuela is a response to a growing consensus that isolating Venezuela has been counterproductive, has created actually much of the problems that are criticized. We can see if you look at the evolution of Venezuelan GDP or even Venezuelan migration. There's been a lot of talk of Venezuelan migration in the region, but also to the United States. And if you look at the evolution of those figures over the last few years, there's the origins lie in the sanctions. Latin Americans are more and more aware that the sanctions have been causing, Venezuela, for example, not to be able to export its main export, oil, which obviously leads to Venezuela facing great economic and social hardship. And then this obviously having a trickle-down effect on poverty and on migration and so on and so forth. So I think, generally speaking, in the region, Lula was speaking for his government, but there's a growing consensus, even in the mainstream diplomacy, that the sanctions have not worked. Not only have they not achieved regime change, which was the open and admitted goal of the United States, but they've actually created a broader regional crisis, and everybody's kind of fed up with this and wants to move on. And I think it's important to insert this in this kind of return of UNASUR and return of South American geopolitics and the 12 South American heads of state getting together to discuss things. And, as you said, agreeing to disagree and sometimes having harsh words for each other, but all sitting at the table and discussing this in contrast to what has happened over the last few years in the Organization of American States. It's important to remember that the Trump administration actually managed to get self-proclaimed president with no legitimacy, Juan Guaido, to be the representative of Venezuela in the OAS. There's no precedent to that. There was no sort of opposition to Pinochet or even to Fidel Castro sitting in some, invented seat at the OAS. This is a completely new thing, a very taboo thing. And clearly at the United Nations and in other multilateral fora, it's the Venezuela of Nicolás Maduro. In international law, the country which the government which represents the country is the government which controls territory and controls institutions. This is international law. But somehow the United States and the OAS, current OAS Secretary General, invented the fact that some figure of the opposition could suddenly take the seat of Venezuela in the Organization of American States. And this shocked, I would say, even mainstream diplomats, not necessarily leftists. And so what we saw yesterday with Lula receiving Maduro and then Maduro actually, having a meeting with the other 11 presidents of the region, some of them who dislike Maduro strongly, undoubtedly, that is kind of a return of, I think, a yearn to negotiate, a yearn to have diplomacy as opposed to just regime change. This attempt at regime change in Venezuela has been ongoing now. There were several coup attempts in 2019 which failed. Maduro's still there. I think the general consensus, even amongst people who and presidents who dislike Maduro, is that they're going to have to sit down with Maduro and come to some kind of modus vivendi and some kind of agreement. And I think that was Lula's you know, the spirit of Lula's meeting with Maduro yesterday.
Okay. Tamir, I mean, I don't want to spend too much of the program talking about Venezuela in particular, but what's the view from Caracas on this? Why is it so important now to bring Venezuela in from the cold?
Well, it is very important because, on the one hand, Venezuela's economy is starting to, you know, grow again. And Venezuela, in a way, has shown that its problems that nobody denies can only be solved by Venezuelans. And that foreign interference, as Guillaume mentioned, especially when it is the imposition of sanctions and an openly regime change policy, which was what was applied to Venezuela during the Trump administration, only brings, you know, hardship for the people of the country and makes finding solutions, sensible, you know, durable solutions, more difficult. So now that Venezuela has overcome that critical period, it is time for the region to focus on an agenda that is more that has more to do with what can the countries do to work together in order to improve their situation, rather than having an institution that is only there for, you know, one country criticizing another, or groupings of countries basically pointing out what they dislike about the internal politics of a different country. For instance, I will give you an example. Peru. You know, Peru has been extremely unstable, probably not had an elected leader finishing its term for over a decade, and still there is no international mobilization, you know, to meddle in the Peruvian internal affairs. Why does it happen in Venezuela? Well, because Venezuela is home to the world's largest oil reserves, and because the government of Venezuela has had an approach to the management of those reserves that probably is not of the taste of the United States administration or some major oil companies. So, again, the regional agenda should be more centered about finding solutions than meddling each other's problems.
Danny, you touched upon it in your last answer. How does the U.S. view a more united and therefore assertive grouping of South American nations and this regional currency that would be designed to rival the U.S. dollar?
The U.S. foreign policy establishment is dead set against the success of a SUR, of a South American and Caribbean unifying currency. Marco Rubio last month on Fox News expressed that if there was no longer dependency on the dollar, if the dollar no longer reigned supreme, then these countries could begin the club of the sanctioned, the club of the blockaded. Marco Rubio is a representative of the Republicans and of the U.S. foreign policy establishment, was very, very afraid that Caracas could find Tehran, and Tehran could find La Paz, Bolivia, and La Paz could find Mexico City, and Mexico City could find Beijing. So all roads these days seem to lead away from Washington. That's why there's so much fear. That's why they got behind this coup attempt against Pedro Castillo in Peru, and they're now supporting the coup government of Boluarte that had representation in Brasilia yesterday. they're doing everything to pivot towards Gabriel Boric. Boric seems to spend more time critiquing Caracas than he does Washington, when his own country was the victim and survivor of the 9/11 1973 coup. So I certainly think that Boric has to sit down and reexamine his talking points and his priorities. We've seen a more bold López Obrador. We've never heard a Mexican presidency since the 1950s speaking these nationalist and internationalist terms. So I do think overall the second iteration of the pink tide, the synthesis is more South American integration and unity and true self-determination But as we're hearing, there's many, many challenges coming from the hegemony of the North, who doesn't want to see the rise of this multipolar world that's on the horizon. And it's in construction right now in Brasilia, in South Africa, and across the world.
Okay, Danny. Guillaume, we've got about 2 minutes left of the program. One final question. To what extent is President Lula trying to establish Brazil as the region's leader? How do other South American states view Brazil right now? And are they willing to fall into line behind it politically?
I think it's going to take a little while. There are a few governments, we saw it in the summit yesterday, who are kind of resisting this idea of UNASUR. I mean, one of them, the government of Uruguay, the president who exited UNASUR, I like to use the word Brexited, you know, because that's really what it looked like at the time, is still the current president. So obviously, for the president of Uruguay, Mr. Lacalle, it's kind of uncomfortable to have left UNASUR and to have to go back in. Whereas all the other ones, maybe they were in favor of it at the time, but they weren't actually president. They weren't actually the ones that left the union. So it's less of a problem to go back in and to accept Lula's invitation. So I think it's going to happen in the medium to long term. We now have 7 members of UNASUR out of the 12 original members. So there's still 5 countries that have to go back in. That's Colombia, Chile, Uruguay, Paraguay, and Ecuador. But the other 7 are firmly back in, with Brazil and Argentina recently going back in the month of April. Brazilian leadership and Lula's leadership, for sure, plays an important role. And it's an old Brazilian dream. There are 2 South American subsystems, the Atlantic Ocean of South America, which is dominated by the Mercosur, that common market of the Atlantic, and on the Pacific, the Andean side, the Pacific, historically the community of Andean states and alliance. But those 2 subsystems don't really communicate with each other. And one of the historic geopolitical goals of Brazil has been to try and unify both the Pacific coast with the Atlantic coast in one big geopolitical area, not just market, a political area as well. And I think that's likely to outlive Lula. We had the exception with Bolsonaro, but I think that was a big phenomenon. I think it's likely to continue in Brazilian foreign policy, and I think it's likely to be successful.
Gentlemen, we're out of time. Many thanks indeed for being with us. Tamir Porras Ponceleon, Guillaume Long and Danny Shaw. And thank you for watching. Don't forget, you can see the programme again at any time by going to the website. Aljazeera.com is where you'll find it. For further discussion, join our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the team here at Doha, thanks for being with us. We'll see you again. Bye for now.